Welcome to the Intercut Podcast, the weekly show going over the TV, movies, and entertainment that people can't cut away from. I am your co-host, Zachary Shevich, and joining me, his best movies are directors. It's Arturo Zurita.
Dude, going through the last decade worth of movies, you realize how easy it is to make a 2019 list. Every year when you're making your top of the year list, you think it's the most difficult things in the world because you're like, what came out in January? What came out in January of 2010?
Yeah.
What constitutes as last of the decade or it's this part of the decade? It's been a crazy ride trying to pick out every single one possible. We think we came up with 10. We don't even know.
Yeah,
we did our best, but it's certainly hard to narrow down 10 years into just 10 movies. So a lot of us didn't, including our guest, who's going to show us that a Canadian top 10 list goes in chronological order. It's Amanda the Jedi.
What's up, guys?
Amanda joined us also for our best movies of 2019 video. Hopefully you've all gotten a chance to check that out. Maybe you'll see us talk about some of those same movies here as we get into which films top our best of the decade list. But we all had some different methodology when it came to how we were sorted through our lists, how we went about organizing what movies should end up in our top 10s. Do you guys want to talk at all about how you approached whittling down 10 years of film?
I just immediately went by year and then just tried to figure out what my favorite of that year was, which, as I mentioned, pretty much immediately went out the window when Social Network and Scott Pilgrim both came out in 2010, but that's pretty much what I stuck to, and here we are.
Art, I know your methodology was a bit different than mine and Amanda's, because I also went by year. I went through my Letterboxd, shouts to Letterboxd again, getting all the free pub that we give them. Yeah. But one of the things that's great about that site is that they let you sort not only by decade, but by year. So I was able to make some lists and figure out my favorites from each year of the past decade, mm-hmm. and then tried to whittle it down from there. But I don't know. It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
I didn't whittle anything down. I have 176 picks that we'll be talking about today. I'm just kidding. I have probably like, it's not 10. It's a little bit more than 10. But yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like when you're talking about the decade, you want to bring it down to 10, but there's really just way more than that. That's the beauty of Absolutely. Movies is that you're not going to come down to having to decide between one or the other. We are today, sadly, but there's so many movies to mention from this past decade. I know Amanda has her own video of it. We've talked about way other 2019 movies that aren't going to be on this mm-hmm. list, but we just made a whole video for that. We'll have our own on Let Me Explain, but I think I have a good amount of movies that, at least for myself, and I think that's the important part here, movies that have defined our decade in movie watching, and I think that's like the whole point in watching a decades list. I'm sure some people are going to come in here just looking for their picks. That's a little weird, but hopefully you get a movie that has been popping up in other lists or a movie that you haven't heard of in the past, and maybe it becomes one of your favorites. We'll see.
Absolutely.
So let's start with some honorable mentions. I don't know if either of you have movies that we should just give a shout out off the bat because you couldn't quite find room for them on your list. I know for me, as much as I tried, there are some movies like Anomalisa, The Big Short, Boyhood, Arturo, The Master, that I thought were just brilliant, but I couldn't justify putting them in the top 10, but maybe in a top 20. Maybe I'll put out my top 50 Letterboxd list at some point. Honorable mentions?
I've definitely got The Big Short as well. Actually, that was my best for 2015, so I don't even know if that's an honorable mention anymore. I don't even know. That's like, it's so hard. There's so many good movies came out. So like, some of them are just stuff that I liked, whether or not it's like artful or not, because like I'm a big fan of Kick-Ass. So I've got Kick-Ass down for 2010 as an honorable mention. I also have The Master down for 2012. End of Watch was actually another really interesting one from 2012. What We Do in the Shadows, It Follows, Gone Girl, Hunt for the Wilder People. Yeah, it's been a great decade, honestly.
Yeah, a really solid decade of films. Art, I know you've got a lot on your list, so maybe we should just jump right into it.
Yeah, so
I'll probably mention some of mine. Yeah.
Yeah, if any of these pop up for you guys, or if they're on your list, then we need to talk about Kevin, Duke of Burgundy, The Handmaiden. I don't know what I wrote there. Oh, Swiss Army Man. Pop Star. Plays Beyond the Pines, A Past, Dogtooth, Columbus. And I just wanted to mention that I don't have any animations on my top list. And I was looking back, and it's not that the movies are bad. You mentioned some really great ones. And Anomalisa. I love the music from
Moana. I had Toy
Moana.
Story 3 on mine.
Tangled is also one of my favorites. And technically, that would make the list. Probably if I remake the list right now, Tangled would end up there. But I did want to note that I think animation in TV series was incredible this year. If we're making a top TV, animation probably secures two spots with BoJack and Gumball. And even last year with Undone and a bunch of the other stuff, I think animation had a really strong year in TV. Mm-hmm. Not to undermine what happened in movies, but just wanted to mention that in case none of the rest of us have animations. Well, the animation community is pretty strong.
Theoretically, I have one.
Okay, sounds good. So those are mine.
Yeah. All right, so let's jump right into it then. We can beat around the bush all we want, but what is your 10th best of the decade? Amanda, let's start with you.
Well, see, mine's weird because I went by year, so I'm trying to help myself out. So I actually think that by decade, 2010 might actually be my best movie of the entire decade. If I just had to pick one movie that I could watch forever, I'm going to go with Social Network.
Ooh.
It's just, it's such a weird thing because I remember when I saw the trailers for it, I really wasn't into film the way I am now. And I was like, who wants to watch that? That sounds horrible. And like, that was the year Inception came out and I was freaking out about Inception. And like, you know, Inception's great. I don't care about it the way that I care about The Social Network right now. I can't.
The idea of a movie about the creation of Facebook when Facebook was such a mindless website that we used for social media, you know, to make such a compelling narrative out of it seemed like magic, honestly.
Yeah. And it's I get that obviously from a based on real events story, it takes quite a few creative liberties. But, you know, sometimes you want that. You want it to just, if it's not going to be so to the T, you just want it to be this powerhouse of a movie, which it is. You've got this incredible script by Aaron Sorkin that's just driven by David Fincher that keeps it a lot cleaner than if Sorkin had been at the helm of everything, I find.
Mother's
incredible
game.
Acting, just the soundtrack from Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross is just something that I can still listen to and just get so into. And again, just calling back to when I saw it in 2010, I was like, oh yeah, it was good, but like, I was so pulled out of the movie when I'm watching Inception and you got these Hans Zimmer just
bong.
And then, you know, Social Network won the Academy Award. And I was like, but years later, absolutely. This is the one time I'm going to say the Academy knew 100% what they were doing. I think it's as close to as perfect as a movie can get, especially in this that sphere and that style of movie. And I 100% agree with Aaron Sorkin's comment of this movie just as easily could have been about a very successful brand of toaster. And it would be just as interesting as it is being about Facebook. So, big fan.
Really? He said that. I disagree with him. There was an interview. I think a review I read. It was a perfect breakdown of The Social Network, saying that it's the creation of something that revolutionized communication by a dude who didn't know how to communicate. And he brought up the beginning, the middle, and obviously the final shot of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, that's a dope thing. So I have to it's the same way I disagree with one of my number one picks and what the director thinks happens at the end
that's
of that
cool.
character.
No, but I definitely agree at that standpoint for sure. Either way, that's...
I want to bring up another Aaron Sorkin movie that did not make my top 10, but it is a personal favorite, Steve Jobs. I know a lot of people think that the ending to that one gets a little too over the top, and it does, but if I were to mention a personal favorite, I wanted to mention it on whoever brought up Social Network first, so that's another one I wanted to toss in there.
I'm sure it's on Zach. It might be on Zach's list, but...
Yeah, I guess, spoiler alert, this is my number one of the decade.
That's mine, too. Yeah, so it's my number one of the decade.
I feel like it should have been in my top 10 now.
Yeah, I know, because we went reverse order, but it's
I mean,
so good.
You mentioned some of the things that are so stunning about it, Amanda, but it's just a movie that's... And I think this is something that's true of just about every modern Fincher release, but it's a film where every little piece of it is working so perfectly and is so expertly done on a technical level. I think about the cinematography from Jeff Cronenworth and those just dark, moody exteriors and the all the office spaces that they have, the chaotic environments of those like early Silicon Valley startup things they had to you know, the opulence of the Harvard campus, which, you know, they didn't actually get the film on Harvard, so it's a recreation there.
And
you know, we talked about Jesse Eisenberg's performance in The Art of Self-Defense on our best movies of the year. This is the other amazing Jesse Eisenberg performance, marrying him to that Aaron Sorkin script, which just has this really amazing rhythm to it.
It's
like watching these verbal fight scenes over and over again. I'm so in awe of this script.
And same
of Fincher's direction. There's an argument that he's the most talented director working right now, and Social Network is a big case in that favor.
I agree 100%.
So Fincher's best of the decade would also go to Social Network for you too. Obviously.
Yeah, and it's tough because Gone Girl is one that like just flirted with my top 10. It's another movie that I think is working on such a precise level, and the writing in that movie is really good too. I just think ultimately Social Network maybe has a little bit more to chew on.
Yeah, I agree with that.
What was it? He had Gone Girl, he had Social Network, he had Mindhunter, he had
Dragon Tattoo,
I think, was this decade as well.
Yeah, it was. So, 2012 or something.
Pretty massive. Pretty impressive.
Not the director of the decade, but definitely one of them.
Not the director of the decade. One of them. For my number 10, I had a couple, and I decided to go with probably my personal favorite pick for this specific list. But Sorry to Bother You was up there. I love that movie coming out of Sundance. I thought it's a fantastic
Boots Riley,
just crazy film. Another one that I had on there was What We Do in the Shadows. I believe one of the funniest movies to come out. Still my personal favorite Taika Waititi film. And I just wanted to throw in They Came Together as well, because that's a movie that makes me laugh every single time. It's so absurd. I don't know where you could stream it right now, but They Came Together. Those are three movies that didn't match up to what made my 10th personal spot. I've had it in the back for a while. Got it from Zach himself.
Yeah.
Brigsby Bear. This is a Sundance movie that came out a couple of years ago. It topped my list there. It topped my favorite of the year as well. I always say that Sundance is my favorite film festival because it produces my favorite movies. Because it usually goes the other way around, where people say it's like, oh, you just like that movie because it came from Sundance. Nah, I like Sundance because it produces movies like this. And I personally love this movie. I like it. I don't know what else to say. I have a whole video on it. You know, it's kind of weird because when you're describing stuff that's like your personal favorite, you can't really describe it fully, but I do have a video on it, and I highly recommend it. Go in knowing as little as possible. I think it's a very fun movie. Very heartfelt, and it kind of gets to the essence of like why I personally love movies to begin with, as the group of friends start creating their own stuff and realizing like that's what it's all about, is if you're not loving what you're making, then what's the point of it? So
absolutely.
I thought that really resonated in this movie.
Nice.
Right, and I think Brigsby Bear is one of a bunch of movies that have come out in the past decade that kind of almost have like a subversive look at nostalgia, right?
Yes.
Where it's not like nostalgia in the same tone as the original piece that inspired it, but it's like maybe a more contemporary look at a property we have some passion for.
And it's perfect because it just so happens to have a space adventure guy, but it's not from the space adventure stuff we know him from, Mark Hamill. And he plays like a really huge part in the movie as well. So overall, I loved it. I highly recommend it if you have the chance to watch it. Put it high on your list.
All right. So my number 10, rounding out our 10 spot, I've also got a film from 2010. It's Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Okay.
Oscar-nominated nice documentary directed by street art legend, Banksy. This is a really interesting movie that examines partially the history of graffiti-style street art and how that style went from being something that was done primarily as like a form of rebellion or expression and done on the streets for no money, but then moved eventually into auctions and galleries and being sold for millions of dollars and hanging up in rich people's mansions. So it's simultaneously charting that path while also charting the path of a couple interesting figures within that world, notably Banksy, the elusive, mysterious, unknown figure who's probably the world's most famous graffiti artist, and the documentarian who becomes known as Mr. Brainwash, who decides to become an artist of his own. And the way that the documentary goes from a chronicle of an art form into this sort of self-reflexive look at, like, what even is art, and is art real, or is it art just things that we decide to spend money on? It's so captivating and asks really interesting questions that I'm still thinking about. It's so thrilling on a moment-to-moment basis, but it's also got that really amazing philosophical element to it. So, yeah, one of my favorite documentaries of the decade. I hope people check this one out.
That's good. I have to give it a rewatch. I haven't seen that one in a while, but compared to the... Someone said that they were working on something new after he did that whole shtick with the thing getting shredded.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know if he's exiting through another gift shop or what, but yeah, that's one of the ones that I've been wanting to revisit. Along with another one, I don't want to spoil it, but another documentary that you've been hyping up for a long time. But I think we'll get into more documentaries in a bit.
Absolutely. So our number nine.
So
Amanda?
Yeah, number nine.
I guess we're going to 2011.
Yeah, I guess it's 2011, but I might actually mess that up here now. But so for my actual 2011, the two that I kind of had originally were 50/50, which is the really kind of heartwarming, heartbreaking story about a guy who finds out he has cancer and he has a 50/50 chance of living. And it just kind of goes through the process of him, you know, the denial, the acceptance, and just it's just really good. It's got Seth Rogen in it. It's got Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Anna Kendrick, Bryce Dallas Howard. And that movie is the reason why I kind of hate Bryce Dallas Howard.
Really?
Even though she seems like a lovely lady. Really worth the watch. And then Drive, which is the you know, the intense movie with Ryan Gosling,
directed by Nick Reffin.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful score and cinematography in that as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna mess this up. I'm gonna mention Scott Pilgrim, because that was my other 2010 top pick, and it's one of my all-time favorite movies. Scott Pilgrim, like, you can't see it in this video because it's too blurry, but all of those pop figures are Scott Pilgrim Funko pop figures. That could probably pay for someone's semester at university if I ever sold those. But I think it's a great, super fun movie. You know, sometimes you watch movies because you want the cinematography, the editing to be subtle, and you want it to just kind of like enhance things without you noticing it's happening. Edgar Wright's the opposite. Edgar Wright is editing to the beat in something like Baby Driver, and Scott Pilgrim versus the World, couldn't imagine a better person to direct this. It takes stuff right out of the comic book, puts it on screen in a super fun animated way. You've got like sound effect flourishes coming off of things. You've got, you know, video game noises. You've got narrators going over the top of things every once in a while. You've got words appearing on screen. Really fun transitions. And the main story, of course, is that, you know, Scott sees this girl named Ramona, wants to try dating her, has to defeat the League of Evil Exes before you can get to it. It's super Canadian, super outrageous, very
super
fun.
Canadian.
Yeah, it's very Canadian. They work at Second Cup. It happens in Toronto. It's, come on, it's so Canadian. The movie's very Canadian. I love it. I adore it. And I know some people are like, it's too weird. And like, get over it.
I second it. No, dude, it's definitely one of the best of the decade. I have it as one of my tops as well. But I knew absolutely Amanda was going to pick it. So I kind of rearranged myself to be like, nah, I want to make sure that we get more picks in there.
I have the same thing, yeah.
My personal favorite one of Edgar Wright's. I think that from the Cornetto trilogy, the middle one.
World's End.
At the World's End?
No, Hot Fuzz.
I personally think Hot Fuzz is his best, just like I think Inglourious is Tarantino's masterpiece.
I agree.
But they're not
that.
My favorite. Django's my favorite Tarantino, the same way that, what did we just say? Scott Pilgrim is my personal favorite of Edgar Wright's, easily. You can't put that movie in without coming out with, like, just excited, happy. That's
so
like the go-to movie you could rewatch.
There's so many little things that you're like, it's so quick paced. It's good.
Or even
I love it.
One of my favorite scenes from it, and I always just search it up. I was showing it to Alina literally the other day, is the cheese bread. I can eat cheese bread all day. Like,
yeah,
you can't, you'll get
bread
fat.
Makes you fat. I can eat garlic bread forever.
Art knows this, that on my desktop computer at home, I've got this screensaver that plays movies
just when, in the background.
You know, when I have a video exporting and it just kind of has to go.
Yeah.
And that's one of my go-to screensaver movies because that's so just visually entertaining. Yes. I keep that one on silent, so you know I'm having to watch these movies without any of the audio, but the visual comedy is so irreverent and chaotic and constantly yes. going at you. Even in a way words, that I yeah. feel like maybe yeah. only Edgar Wright is capable of
I
right
agree.
Now, or at least capable of to that extent or to that
to land it,
effectiveness.
To,
yes, yeah. to land it, to make it really work. Yeah. And it's just a really, really entertaining movie. I don't think there's much like it before or since.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. I love it.
All right, so I guess that's your number nine, Amanda?
Yeah, I'm going to make that. I'm going in weird orders because technically these yeah. would fair. Be my one and two, I guess. Those are my.
That's fair.
Of the decade, those are my favorite movies of the decade.
Yeah.
All right.
That's fine.
So, Art, let's go with your number nine.
Again, just like as Amanda's saying, most of these you catch me on a different day. They move around, but these are like, you know, the top 10. And I think for the most part, all of our number ones, we've claimed what it's going to be. But everything else, not being in particular order, I want to make number nine my horror pick. I would consider Annihilation sci-fi horror, and I think that should get a shout out. I love Get Out, The Vavitch. There's one that stands out on top. And it's almost a twofer, but if I had to pick between the two, my boy Ari Aster, man, he just comes and he kills it. It has to be Hereditary, but after rewatching Midsommar, which is Alina's preferred pick, she got me a little bit. She's almost got me scared on that portrait one, saying that it's going to beat up what my real one is. Because after rewatching Midsommar, it's got to be a tie between Hereditary and Midsommar for me. Again, a bunch of other filmmakers. Annihilation, Get Out, those are great movies. Nobody is doing it like Ari Aster is doing it. I just saw the movie The Grudge. Incredible cast. Do they know that there's horror directors out there? This is great cast. Someone give them Ari Aster. Somebody give them the good numbers to, you know, the directors making horror films out there. I want to talk Hereditary more so because I remember coming out of that movie at Sundance and there was literal people crying. And I remember talking about the movie and people saying that I was overhyping it up. Then the movie comes out and it becomes the obvious pick to be in your top 10 of the year. I think it surpasses the decade. I think it's one of the best ones. Every single time I rewatch it, I pick out something new, and it's one of those movies that the more experiences you go through yourself, like this is not just a scary movie. This is top tier filmmaking in general. So to even call it a horror movie, this and Midsommar feels like kind of terrible to say, because it is a movie should grow with you the more experiences you have, and I can see that absolutely. Being a movie that when I revisit it after going through who knows what, I'm going to see it differently as well, and I think that's the case for all of his movies, including his shorts. So Hereditary, yeah. Midsommar, honestly, Ari Aster, number nine.
I couldn't actually watch Hereditary again until I watched Midsommar.
With the lights
I saw
on.
Hereditary, and I was like, I'm never watching that again in my life.
Yeah,
ever. I love that movie so much.
And then I saw Midsommar, and I was like, I can handle Hereditary now.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of horror filmmakers who make movies that sort of try to imply a bigger world or have little secrets in them. And, you know, when you actually sit down and try to pick them apart and analyze them, there's not a whole lot there. Like, maybe there's some metaphors or themes or what have you. Mm-hmm. Ari Aster is one of the few guys in working in horror who diving into his movies takes more time than watching his movies. There's
he makes the whole Bible.
Lore packed to the brim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's the best, dude. It's never lazy. Again, and I say this, and it's for one of my other picks that's going to come up. I like a director where I could trust them. I think that's a big thing that we don't have when we go to movie theaters anymore, where you trust the director. Quentin Tarantino, I think you guys have heard of him. He recently came out and had said that as well, that he had bashed a movie and I can't remember what it was, and he said that movie wasn't good because he didn't trust the director. And I was like, wow. He said he did not feel he was in good hands is what he said. Ari Aster and Denis Villeneuve, some of my favorites, Tarantino himself included, are directors where you can, if I don't get something in the movie, I'm going to watch it again because I'm putting the benefit of the doubt in the director. He has earned my trust. If I don't get something, I at least have the confidence that he or she does, in a sense. So that's Ari. Like, there's a bunch of things I didn't get in Midsommar the first time watching it, Hereditary the second time watching it. But, yo, there's been some people who say that he's lazy when it comes to his stuff. I'm like, yo, this man has an entire, what was it, 100-page Bible just for all of the stuff that he had for Midsommar. Hereditary. Yeah. Like, the amount of detail that this man goes into is insane, and I think it is unmatched today.
Yeah, someone else that's similar to that, though I do prefer Ari, is David Eggers. With the Vivitch and the Lighthouse, like just knowing the research that went into making both of those movies, that you can tell that there's like a level of care that a lot of directors, especially in the horror universe, are just not willing to put into their movies, and it shows.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for mentioning that. You know what? I want to give a shout out to somebody else who I think should be mentioned in Best of the Decade. Our man who did It Comes at Night.
Trey Edward Schultz.
If we don't mention him later on, I think he should get a mention here also for his work on Krisha and his work most recently on Waves. Which
still
we
thinking about Waves.
Still thinking about Waves. Again, another movie that would resonate with you within the decade. So yeah, that's my number 9 pick. It's a good pick because I feel like Ari Eggers, Peel, and who did we just mention? Schultz has been in that league. We keep putting them. Go to a Reddit thread talking about horror filmmakers, and those four will always come up. So,
yeah.
Those are my picks.
All right. So, yeah, Art's number 9, Hereditary. My number 9, I really wanted to put the short film World of Tomorrow here.
Nice.
I decided not to because I felt like short films are kind of their own thing.
Do it.
I mean, it's going to be on my Letterboxd version of this list. But, you know, there's something about World of Tomorrow because it embodies this, like, highly creative spirit in which it does a thing that I think we've been seeing a lot more of this decade, in which it deals with deep philosophical, moral, like, quandaries while also giving you just the most silly and absurd comedy simultaneously. That's one of the things that I love about BoJack Horseman.
Yes, sir.
What I love about the presentation in Don Hertzfeldt's short films. And that's what I also really love about my number 9 pick, Swiss Army Man.
Yeah.
You know, it's I felt really weird putting the Farting Corpse movie on a Best of the Decade list. I gotta admit.
It was on our top A24.
It's bold.
It was the movie. It's the movie we named our best A24 movie, so it's already pretty high up. But I think there's something just really amazing in the way that the film is able to balance the filmmaking creativity. Just there's this like an ingenuity in the way that they tell this story of a guy and this body that he's able to manipulate. It creates this just absolutely hilarious slapstick comedy, and there's also a lot of really funny one-liners. But then there's this like odd profundity that you get towards the end of the movie as you realize things about our main character, the Paul Dano character, the ways in which the movie is a manifestation of his loneliness and that he was not in a good place when we met him, and how meeting up with this corpse is helping him. I don't know, man. The Daniels, this has made me deep dive on the director Daniels' work through music videos and their more recent stuff. But I feel like this has been kind of the pinnacle of their abilities. It's just it's so silly, but also kind of hits your heart. I loved it. Swiss Army Man.
Agreed.
I mean, I agree. I had it as an honorable mention. We had picked it as our A24 favorite film. There's so much about it that doesn't need to be explained. That's the best part about it.
Yeah.
It's just an emotion in a sense. There's a bunch of little things into the directors kind of left open into interpretation. Some stuff that they just didn't answer. Like when one of them recognizes him at the end and he goes, "Hey, don't I know you?" Just stuff that gets cut out. And I feel like what you had mentioned, it's going to be very difficult finding that magic again. Because they're high-profile actors, like Paul Dano, Daniel Radcliffe, Mary Elizabeth Winston. To be in a movie where Harry Potter farts is so absurd, right? That anything that you do afterwards, there's going to be a follow-up to, right? You then realize, like you were saying with the music videos, it's the guy who did, what's the big music video where they were, like, moving around?
Oh, the one with the Foster the People.
Oh, well, Foster the People was a good one, but I'm talking the,
The Turn Down for What video?
Turn Down for What video. If you've never seen that video, watch it. Realize that it's the guys from Swiss Army Man. It's going to answer so many questions for you. They had a crazy decade. this obviously being their best, we also caught at Sundance their follow-up, one of their follow-ups. It wasn't the Daniels, but a Daniel, who went to go do the Death of Dick Long.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Whoa, what a movie that was.
Yep.
Again, it gets the absurdity. Yeah. I don't know if it gets the profundity quite as well.
And they have a bunch of other stuff. They worked on Legion. But these are two directors that definitely should be on the radar to watch out for. And Swiss Army Man is an experience that I don't think can be replicated. So... great pick.
All right, Amanda, let's get your eighth.
My eighth, but 2012?
Yeah, let's go 2012.
Okay, so again, this was a year that I thought that there was a lot of good stuff. So we did honorable mentions with things like The Master, End of Watch, Avengers also came out this year, which was kind of like the first superhero movie that you were like, there's no way they're going to be able to pack this many people into one movie and make it work. And goddammit, they made it work. It was great. But my actual number one pick for 2012 is probably a very weird one, and I doubt this movie even was in consideration for any of your guys' lists, Silver Linings Playbook.
That's fair.
Oh, yeah. No, I love this movie.
It's just one of those movies that I can put on whenever, and even if I'm just trying to watch it really quick while I'm doing something, I find myself just captured for the entire runtime, and I just want to watch the whole thing from start to finish. Because I like, if I go to the gym, I like putting movies on something when I do cardio, and I just can't stop watching it. And it's just, I really like the portrayal of mental illness in it. I like the way the characters come across. So it's Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence are the main, the central two characters, and it essentially starts with Bradley Cooper's character getting pulled out of a court-mandated mental institution because he ends up having a bipolar psychotic break where he ends up beating the crap out of some guy that his wife was cheating with. And it's just kind of, there's so many little moments and things, and you see where he gets it from his dad and how he's just trying to be better. And it's just a nice movie, you know? It's just David O. Russell, I believe, was, David O. Russell, the director.
David O. Russell had a good year.
Yeah, it's, he did, you know, he did a great job with it. It's something that I love from the first moment I saw it, and it's held up for me over the years. So even if we were just doing a top 10 list of the last decade, it probably still would have made it on, honestly.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, if people forget why Jennifer Lawrence became such a sensation, you got to look at some of those performances from earlier in the decade, like Silver Linings Playbook.
Absolutely.
She's just so dynamic and charismatic, and I think just gives you such a window into that woman's soul through that film. It's a really great movie.
Yeah, love it.
When you do the cardio and you're watching it, do you also pull the Bradley Cooper and get the
absolutely. I get the trash bag on and I'm just going. Yeah, absolutely. I want to run with Bradley Cooper. That's my entire logic behind this.
Gotcha.
It's
great.
It's basically one of those movies. It's always on my phone for when I travel. It's usually always on my iPad. Like, I always have it as something that I can just go to because I know it's never going to disappoint and I'm always going to want to watch it.
You pick up like a memory card of hers at home and it's got Silver Linings Playbook. Silver Linings
Playbook. Exactly.
That's funny.
Really into movies that start with the letter S.
That's what it is, right? You're just gonna
That's
have
what we're realizing,
Exactly. It's the trend.
So for the number eight spot for myself, I decided to stick to action movies. And there was a lot of ones that stuck close. End of Watch is kind of a mixture of crime, drama, action. Yeah. And you had mentioned it as well. I know it was in the honorable mention, End of Watch. The Mission Impossible installments that we got this year were insane. They were fantastic. MI6, I know it being one of the more recent ones, It literally took sequences that I personally have always wished I could direct film, like falling from the sky and actually having the cameraman fall with them.
Yeah.
Nothing beats the Raids. It's the Raids 1 and 2. I love them both. If I had to put one over the edge, I would say the Raid 2 because it comes with story. You're someone who doesn't like story. You don't want it to be 2 hours long. You just like a nice, compact 90-minute movie. Raid 1 for you. I love these films. I think they're fantastic. The filmmaking behind them and all of the work, the effort that goes into them. They're Indonesian films. By an American director. I want to say he's American, I think. Don't quote me on that. They've been working on making these into American films for a long time. Sure, but what probably won't translate over is just the preciseness in the choreography. Again, 1, 2, you may have your preferred either or, but the second one is just fantastic. I just want to wrap it up with a scene and that I mention all the time when it comes to one of the shots that they got when they were filming a car chase sequence and where they needed to pass. You know, this goes with 1917, another great pick of the decade as well. But there's a shot They are driving in a motorcycle, and the cameraman, who's sitting behind someone's motorcycle, passes the camera into a vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
And the cameraman inside the vehicle, in order to not be seen when they're approaching it, is dressed as the chair. Grabs
it's like
it,
a YouTube
passes
prank
it along.
Channel.
I absolutely adore both of these. It is without a doubt that they are best of the decade. There may be more above, but they need to get a mention. I'd rather them be mentioned earlier in the video in case you guys click out or your computer dies or something. The Raids.
Also, he's a Welsh director. He's Welsh.
Welsh director. I appreciate Welsh. That. Thank you so much. Yeah,
no worries.
I always confuse them because it's Gareth Edwards, Gareth Evans.
Yeah.
You know, and they're making so movies simultaneously all the time, so I had always confused them. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no worries.
All right, The Raid. That's Art's number eight. My number eight. It's another documentary. This is the only two documentaries that made it to my list. I mentioned Exit Through the Gift Shop, but the 2018 film Minding the Gap.
Oh, man, I thought choice. I had you. Okay.
Great one.
Yeah, a really unbelievably emotional picture that takes you through the lives of these characters in a dilapidated Midwest town as they kind of take the journey from boys to men and start to see what life is like when you actually have to, you know, take care of yourself and be on your own. And it's a film that touches on class, on the economy, on race, on sex and sexual violence. There's just so many elements that are a part of our lives as modern day people that I think this film does a really beautiful job of handling. And I think one of the things about these types of movies is that you inevitably have to ask the question of, like, how does documenting this stuff get affected by the documenter? And then Bing Liu does something really, really intelligent in this film. He turns the camera on himself and interrogates his own past and what connects him to these stories. And you find he's got a much stronger relationship to his protagonist than you might think at first glance. It's a really beautifully shot documentary and one that left me weeping like a baby. I love this movie.
It's good.
It's great.
Great.
Go check out Minding the Gap. I think it's still
on Hulu.
Hulu.
Yeah, it's on Hulu. So there's no excuse to even skip it. I do want to rewatch it.
Unless you're Canadian.
Unless you're Canadian, you're right. Never mind.
Yeah. If you're in America. Great pick.
You know, for a second, I thought you were going to pick Camera Person.
Camera Person is another one that ended up in my consideration. It's a really great film. Did you get a chance to catch up with it? Or?
Not yet.
I haven't seen it. No.
Yeah. I think Kirsten Johnston is the name of that filmmaker, and she used clips from her career as a documentary cinematographer to then tell the story of her life.
Oh, that's really cool.
It's really amazing. That's another one.
And I believe she has another one. Yeah, she has
coming
another movie
at Sundance.
Dick Johnson is Dead, premiering at Sundance.
Yep. Nice. That's a good pick.
All right, Amanda, let's go with your number seven, 2013.
So this was another one I kind of had a couple of runner-ups. So Prisoners, which, you know, yeah, so
Denis.
Good.
Hard, can't go wrong with Denis.
You can't go wrong with Denis. American Hustle, which I like more than most people, but it was a fun movie. But my top two for that year, Her and Wolf of Wall Street, I would say, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, obviously just a powerhouse of a movie, just incredible. All, like, the acting in it was absolutely outstanding. There's so many moments in that are still getting called back in pop culture now. It's prime with the memes all the way through, but it's just because it's...
That one's going to come up again a little bit.
I kind of figured, I won't talk too much about it now just because I figured it would be higher if on the people's list that were going in order. So we'll talk a little bit about Her, which is kind of, in the same way, just very indicative of the kind of culture that we kind of live in now. So it's basically a guy ends up getting into a relationship with the digital character, essentially a voice played by Scarlett Johansson. Mm-hmm. And it goes through it as if it's an actual relationship. And I think that in a way is a pretty
genius.
Good comment. It's genius. It's a very good commentary on what we are in now, and like the society we have now, and how it can go forward. And just different ways. There's so many different ways you can look at it, from just being like unhealthy relationships with technology and the unwillingness to actually just live the life that you have outside, and you know, isolation and loneliness, and not wanting to deal with problems you've had before, and you'd rather just, you know, put a Band-Aid over it, essentially. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, her's a really beautiful movie, and talking about that element of the digital romance. You know, I think a lot of the movie is really about loneliness, but it's not just the loneliness that we see demonstrated through the Joaquin Phoenix character entering into this relationship with his phone. But you look around at the people he walks by, and everybody's looking down at a phone, or they're out of focus. You look even at his job. His job is to write letters for other people who don't feel like they can do it. I mean, it's very much a world about lacking connections. And I think Spike Jonze does a really brilliant job in creating this kind of not so distant future for us.
Absolutely.
You know, the thing about her is that I had this phone for so long, right? Like, I started my YouTube channel, and I would like view stuff through this phone and everything.
Yeah.
And then it came time to upgrading the phone.
Yeah. You still use the phone.
Oh, it hurt. It hurt to say goodbye. And I'm sitting there, and I was just like, Spike Jonze was right. It felt like I was saying goodbye to someone I knew for the longest time. I was crying like a little.
Not wow. Same thing. I upgraded from like a 6S, and you're just kind of like,
You're kind of like, nah, that phone was like, because you contacted the people who you love the most through that device. Yeah. That was the screen you were looking at. That's the thing that fell. And you're like, oh my gosh,
there it goes. Feels different.
Yeah, then the new one feels different. It's not the same. So he was on one. He was on one with that. Plus just all the intricacies and the acting and everything that he does in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Still stands
great
on
great performance by Joaquin, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, arguably a better performance than Joker.
I would say that if I'm
at number 7, I have Joker, best of the decade.
Joker.
Nah, at number 7, I actually had a couple of. I have Wolf of Wall Street coming literally up next at my number 6.
Sick.
But at number 7, I had a couple of other picks. Let me see some of the stuff that I have here. Yeah, Prisoners, Blade Runner 2049.
I got that too.
Sicario.
Yep.
Arrival.
Oh my
Anything
god, it's like there's a theme.
Denis Villeneuve touched pretty much ends up on this list. I thought Incendies was his best of the decade. Then I remembered I'm biased towards a little movie he made called Enemy. My number 7 is not for
talk about them spiders.
It is not for everybody. I understand that. That is why I had mentioned Prisoners, Blade Runner 2049, Sicario, Arrival, Incendies. It doesn't matter which one it is. You have a favorite Denis Villeneuve movie. He is the best director of the decade, in my opinion. There's no other way to put it. He is my personal favorite best director of the decade. And my personal favorite one of his is Enemy. I won't say anything else.
Valid.
It has been very interesting to see his ascent this decade. I think more than most of the directors we're mentioning, he's the guy who started the decade very much as like a unknown
misses.
Quantity
yeah.
and is now, you know, Dune is going to be a huge movie in 2020.
Yep.
So.
Incredible.
Awesome.
And I feel like his movies kind of go all over the place too. Like nothing
top
really
tier.
Stays
exactly.
in one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm reading the list and I was like, this is the same guy.
Yeah.
It's
which is crazy.
Same
and
guy.
It's a good thing. Sometimes you see that and you're like, wow, these are just all so different, but it's like, they're all very different, very quality.
That's good.
Movies.
It's great. He's fantastic.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's my number 7. Zach?
My number 7 is another movie from 2018, my other favorite from 2018 aside from Minding the Gap, Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade.
Ooh.
You know, you talk about character studies from the past decade. I thought this one was just really precise in the world it's trying to depict, and it's a world that's very much in transition because you look at the way in which technology is constantly changing our interactions. Actually, this is a weird companion to Her in a way.
Yeah.
Just because she, you know, there's that loneliness and there's that looking out through the world through her phone. And I think some of the ways in which you see Instagram used in that movie and you see her, you know, trying to use YouTube in that movie to become a person that she's not, a person that she thinks she'll like more, is really spot on to how humans live in our modern world. I don't know if there's a lot of films that quite have balanced that marrying of technology with character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's just, even though I didn't grow up in this same era of social media, there's just the little habits she has, the little hesitations in her voice and insecurities in talking to people mm-hmm. that resonate with anybody who's experienced any anxiety, I'd say. I think it's really well done. It's emotional and, you know, oddly funny considering how uncomfortable it is. Yeah. This is my horror pick too.
Honestly, though, it's everything. Like, you know, I went through my own problems as an eighth grade girl, but obviously technology was completely different back then. We were just on the cusp of what's happening now. But I just don't understand how Bo Burnham, a man in his, like, you know, just turning 30, can mm-hmm. so expertly write the role of a modern 13-year-old girl and have it come mm-hmm. across as believable and accurate and real. Like, I'm sure there's people watching that being like, that's my little sister. Mm-hmm. You know, right down to the YouTube videos trying to pretend to be a different person. And like, that's people that I interact with in my streams sometimes. And it's like, it's crazy how well he just nailed it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I would also like to give a shout out to his stand-ups.
Yes, he's a funny dude.
Some of the best stand-up of the last decade as well. Too.
Yeah, he's going to be in another, he's in a Sundance movie as well.
Yeah, Promising Young Woman.
Yeah.
All right, Amanda, we're at 2014/6.
All right, this is another one of those really big years. Some of my...
This is my year.
Yeah.
I've been arguing with Art that this is the year of the decade.
Which one?
2014. Your boy came out this year.
I agree. 2014 is a great year.
But 2019 is kind of like trying to kick its ass. But I know that Art's going to mention Whiplash later. We've already touched on Gone Girl. I'd already mentioned some of the other ones. I'm going to go with Nightcrawler for 2014.
Yeah.
Nightcrawler. Fantastic movie. Jake Gyllenhaal pulling out all the stops as an actual just like sociopath. I feel like so often when you get people in movies that are either sociopathic or psychopathic, they always have to actively be trying to kill people. Or they did kill people. This is just a man that's willing to let everything around him go to shit and affect things. And he's just so scary to the people around him. Like, he's willing. I guess he does one thing. But either way, it's not like he's blatantly killing people. But he's willing to let everybody around him die or suffer for the sake of the shots or for his own personal gain. And he sells the role perfectly. It's just this amazing, just complete... It's hard to really describe the way that he acts in that movie. The main premise of the story, obviously, is that he essentially is just kind of one of these guys. He's trying to scam people. He's stealing copper pipes at the beginning, and then comes across somebody filming a news at a crime scene, basically, to try to get the first shots of accidents, and you know, if it bleeds, it leads type thing. And then he gets really into it, and this of course just starts winding down into a dark thing where he'll move bodies if he's the first one to a crime scene, not give people footage of crime so that he can sit on it and make more news reportings with it. Just literally somebody who's willing to just not care about what the situation at hand is for his own personal gain. And it's fantastic.
Yeah, the way that this film sort of marries the idea of like the American dream and this ideal of if you just work hard, you can make something of yourself with a sociopath.
Yes.
Is really, really brilliant. And you talked about that Jake Gyllenhaal performance. It's so great in that he's not so outwardly sociopathic constantly. Yes, you have moments and there's that iconic screaming into the broken mirror shot. But most of the film, it's just this quiet thing lurking under the surface.
It's a smirk.
This thing. Yeah. And this element of the conversation that makes people uncomfortable, you know, that way that sometimes you talk to someone and you can just tell there's something not right. But
yeah,
it's not, they didn't say it's anything.
It's not overt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really brilliant movie. It's beautifully shot.
Absolutely.
And directed too. Just it's heart pounding. And you get to that final sequence with the chase, him and Riz Ahmed. It's so good. I was blown away by this movie. It's hard to pick, but that's definitely in my top five of 2014.
Yeah, absolutely. Thought it was great.
Dude, Jake Gyllenhaal for the entire decade was just literally playing psychopaths.
Yeah, he was.
Down to his Marvel role.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Sack Lunch Bunch yet? Because he's basically playing Nightcrawler as a kid's music instructor.
I haven't gotten to that part yet because I've been seeing that in fragments, but everyone kept posting his image on Twitter. So, yeah. So the 2010s is a decade that he lost his damn mind.
Absolutely.
Actually, just going back to Nightcrawler for a second, I think that Jake Gyllenhaal performance would definitely make our my list if this was a top 10 performance.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, agreed. I think that's the main reason why it's... I think there was something I preferred more this year, but I know Art's going to mention it later. So I just have it on... I just went with Nightcrawler. But yeah, the performance in particular is just... It's incredible. Absolutely. Yeah, incredible.
Not Oscar nominated.
Not Oscar nominated. Which is so weird.
What? That's crazy, Zach.
But what a year it was.
Y'all already know my number six pick is what Amanda said. I think we're going to talk about it later when Zach brings it up. But I do want to mention that besides Wolf of Wall Street, Martin Scorsese had Irishman this year. He had a couple of other picks that were my personal favorites, but between
Martin Scorsese made about like 28 hours of movie decade.
With all of his documentaries and everything that else that he's done, insane. And it doesn't even include his producing, like Uncut Gems.
Mm-hmm.
I know not everyone likes it, but to many, Joker would appear on this list. Joker as well. All the stuff that he's made, Wolf of Wall Street will still be at the top of mine. So Wolf of Wall Street is my number six, but we'll mention that in a bit. What's yours, Zach?
All right. My number six, I just rewatched it on recommendation of Quentin Tarantino. Shouts out to the Rewatchables podcast.
Dunkirk.
Yeah. Christopher Nolan, I think, is one of the most talented directors we have working right now. And oftentimes his movies end up getting maligned. And I think Dunkirk ended up coming out at a weird time for him in which a lot of people were kind of frustrated after Interstellar and tired of the way that he likes to manipulate time. It's like, oh, it's just another movie where he has different timelines. But there's so much more than that in Dunkirk. The Dunkirk is such a well-orchestrated, perfectly paced movie. And in the way that it depicts this great retreat, this retreat of British soldiers from France back to England in order to avoid getting massacred by the German army. I think it does something that's very unique amongst war movies in that it's about the valiance of saving people rather than the heroicism of going into battle against the enemy.
Yeah.
I think that's something that's really brilliantly executed about it in that It's a war movie that's about how are we going to save as many people as possible, and you don't even see the enemy for the most part in this film.
True.
Not to mention just how beautifully shot a lot of this is. I was just stunned rewatching some of the cinematography from Hoyt Van Hoytema. You know, the shots of the bombs blowing up on the beach in front of what is his name, Finn Wolfhard.
No,
it's the other Finn. Whatever.
The other Finn.
Yeah, you just said I can't remember. You said Phil, and I was like, "Oh, Wolfhard." No.
But yeah, the shot on the of the deck and all the soldiers ducking down. There's just so many brilliant images. And just to talk about that jumping through time thing again, the way in which he's able to create these parallels with when you're going from a 1 week long story to a 1 day long story to 1 hour long story is genuinely amazing, remarkable filmmaking. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Quentin Tarantino said it's his number two of the decade. I'm not quite that high.
Yeah, it's
but
good.
It's a really, really good movie.
Yeah. It's Fionn Whitehead, actually. Whitehead.
Yeah. Fionn Whitehead. Or something, right?
Yeah. I just rewatched
the Bandersnatch
it.
Dude.
Yeah.
He had said that when he watched it a third time is when it went up to his number two.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many
You
got to watch it one more time, and it might just be your best of the decade.
Yeah.
Right.
Though I would like to say real quick, I think The Last Jedi actually put to words the what you kind of were exemplifying about Dunkirk. We don't win by fighting what we hate. We win by saving what we love.
There you go. Ryan Johnson.
All right, so Amanda's number five pick, The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi.
No, it's not. I actually don't hate The Last Jedi as much as everybody else, but sorry, that's like five dislikes on the video right there.
Amanda, I think we are at 2015, number five for you.
2015. We're down to 2015 now. This is might be one of the years that I should theoretically skip over, but I'm going to actually just put I'm going to put two together. I'm putting two together because they kind of, they're both about really horrible situations that are real and incredibly upsetting. Big Short and Spotlight.
All right.
You know, I know Spotlight definitely got the Oscar nod, and I know when it comes to certain things like this, people tend to start looking at it poorly, but I do still think that it shed light on a very serious, horrendous, disgusting situation. Obviously,
absolutely,
incidences of pedophilia and child abuse within the Catholic Church, and how certain communities, just because of how linked they are to Catholicism, it almost becomes like the priest is not just the priest. The priest is God, not just the link to God, is God. And if the priest takes special interest in your child, that's not something to be concerned about. That's something to be proud of. And how the whole congregations just work by, like, if an incident pops up, they don't prosecute. They just ship them off somewhere else where they can ignore the problem a little bit longer. It's heartbreaking. It's frustrating. It's so angering, especially when you finish it and it just shows all the different locations where they found instances mm-hmm. of child abuse. And, you know, we're still getting stories every year. So this one's specifically detailing Boston. I know this year there was a bunch of news articles coming out about Philadelphia. Very pertinent issue. And then The Big Short is, of course, what went into the Wall Street crash of 2008, basically, when everything kind of hit in 2008 and things went bust. And that it kind of goes into detailing all of the issues that went into that, why it happened, why the housing market specifically crashed. And it's interesting to see how that reverberates through other movies. So, like, Hustlers, for example, came out this year, and it even shows how that affected strip clubs and how the everything mm-hmm. crashing then affected people going to strip clubs, which completely changed that profession and kind of allowed more seedy things to kind of sneak into that profession. And the movie itself is just super well-paced, very quick, fantastic acting. You kind of have Ryan Gosling narrating loosely through it. And then every once in a while, if there's like a topic that you want to understand, they'll bring in like an actress to explain it.
Yeah,
like
they've got the,
Margot Robbie in a tub, Selena Gomez. But the only
playing cards.
Exactly. My big issue with it, though, is like certain continuity things. So specifically Margot in the tub. Keep an eye on that champagne glass and watch where it goes, because like 1 minute it's up to
they
here,
were distracted 1 minute with Margo.
They were like, did anybody keep it? Who's watching continuity on the glass? It's like no one's watching.
It's a tough task.
Yeah. Either way, it's a very interesting movie about a topic that should not actually be that interesting. It's fast paced and it's going to keep you engaged. And I feel like throughout the years, throughout the rest of the decade, there's been so many movies that have tried to hit what The Big Short is, and they all just fall short, and they all just kind of fall a little bit flat in comparison.
Question.
Yeah. Go ahead, Art.
Do y'all not like Vice?
Not as much as I like The Big Short.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I think there's some really interesting things that Adam McKay does in Vice. Mm-hmm. But this is a great balance of the informative aspects that he likes to get across, the comedic aspects. Mm-hmm. And it still works as a linear drama.
Yes.
I think Vice is maybe a little bit too patchy.
I would agree. Yeah, that would be my complaint there.
But yeah, I think one of the things that I really love about The Big Short is the way that Adam McKay is kind of utilizing all these different elements of film and all these different things that cinema allows you to do. You talked about the Margot Robbie scene, or let's cut to Anthony Bourdain talking directly to the camera to explain this complicated subject, and then let's give you some voiceover, let's give you some on-screen text. I think there's a way in which that movie is kind of firing on all cylinders that's really remarkable and a great feat of filmmaking.
Absolutely.
My number five is Vice. No, I'm just kidding. My number five is Tied. It's a very interesting tie because there is absolutely nothing that connects these two together. But they're top-tier filmmaking, and top-tier filmmaking to, I think, the exact level. It's very weird. But my number five is 12 Years a Slave and Mad Max Fury Road. I couldn't get rid of one of these, so they both had to be tied at my number five spot. 12 Years a Slave is an absolute masterpiece. It's not a movie you want to rewatch. But you need to watch it at least once through, I want to say. It was the beginning of when I noticed that Plan B, the The studio.
Brad Pitt's production company?
Production company. This being the only time where he literally plays the white savior in the movie. But this being like one of the first times that I noticed that production company and have noticed it ever since with all of the movies that he's carried through. I think this is a masterclass in filmmaking from Steve McQueen. And in the same vein, I also think Mad Max Fury Road, a completely very different movie, is an adrenaline punch like no other that I ain't even included in my action movies. I think it's just visual explosions in your face to a degree that I think a lot of people would agree was some of the best of the decade filmmaking that people, when it came to the Oscars, were like arguing for that as if it was like the indie artsy film.
Yeah.
Man, you know? And this thing, all they had was what? The storyboard that they were going off of for it? But I love it. I think it's incredible. I think both of these movies, the more that you watch in them, the more that you get. Again, very different tones, very, very different outcomes that you're going to get from both. But both 12 Years a Slave, Mad Max, Fury Road have to be mentioned as best of the decade, in my opinion.
Yeah, Steve McQueen is an absolute brilliant filmmaker. We've talked a lot about how we really love Widows, but I'd say 12 Years is probably the best film he's made, and or at least the best film he's made this decade.
Yeah.
And there's an unrelenting, harrowing nature to the movie, just in the depiction of that journey that I don't know if we have something quite comparable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, I think a movie like that kind of has to exist. So I'm very glad for Stephen McQueen to have done it. But talking more specifically about Mad Max Fury Road, that's a movie I really love. That's a movie that I actually have at number two on my Best of the Decade list. And it's for the reasons you said. It's this crazy action-packed thriller with so many elements working together. You talk about how the Oscars couldn't even deny this type of blockbuster filmmaking when the production design is so thorough and so detailed. You know, I often talk about this like I call it a Rube Goldberg machine of an action movie, because every action is the direct it directly results in a reaction in a way that is so pleasant to see fight scenes where a gun gets kicked away and it slides to someone who's then going to pick it up, and that turn pushes someone off. Like,
it's good.
They've so thoroughly thought through every little action in a way that makes allows the filmmaking to make sense.
The chaos.
Because oftentimes you see action movies and it's like a blur of cars moving and fists throwing. And I feel like you can tell the each step of the process here, and the way in which it doesn't stop, it just piles onto each other and gives you a little bit more to learn about this world as you move along. I'm in awe of that type of filmmaking, down from the production design to the editing, from pre to pro post. You know, it's a really brilliantly done film. So I got it at number two.
Did you ever see the black and white version?
Actually, no, I haven't.
I hope they re-release it in theaters one of these days, because he really hyped it up himself. He said he really wanted it to be seen in black and white as well, but he said he knew they were never going to push that. So that would be an interesting version. Mad Max definitely is one of those movies that's going to get re-releases in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that. I saw that movie 3 times in theaters.
Same, dude. Same.
Yeah. All right, Amanda, I believe
I think
we're
it's
up
yours.
To... Oh, yeah, you're right. We're at my number five. Number five is Whiplash. We'll talk about that later.
We're just going to leave that for our...
Amanda.
2016.
We're at your number four. 27?
2016.
No, it's 16. You're right.
2016. So my favorite movie of 2016, while there's some Hunt for the Wilder People as a runner-up, Arrival as a runner-up, La La Land. I don't know. I love Damien Chazelle. Obviously, I already mentioned Whiplash, but I'm going to let Art get to it. But something about La La Land, it just comes together so nicely. And I think, honestly, after my Cats rant, some people were like, well, you just don't like musicals. And I was like, no, I love musicals. I hate Cats. But what I think is so special about La La Land as a musical is that you'll notice, and this is one of the ones when I realized this was kind of a thing, I thought it was really cool. It's very musical heavy in the beginning, which is normal. But then as the earlier on, it's always like, oh, we have all these dreams. We're trying to make all these different things happen. We have all of these like, expectations and versus reality. And then they get into this like this romance where everything's perfect and great. But then as the problems and the reality of life kind of keep crashing in on them, those musical numbers actually start dying away a little bit more until it just mm-hmm. gets down to like a couple towards the end. You get way more mm-hmm. arguments between the two of them. You get way more moments of her expecting to do great at that solo show. And then it's only like a handful of people have shown up. And it's just like that crushing reality of defeat. And things do end up working out for her. And then it just completely subverts your expectation because before it leaves off right to the end, it's him convincing her to go to this yeah. audition. And you assume they're going to get together after it shows that she actually gets the part. And then it cuts to her getting home and it's not him that's there. And then it just keeps just cutting as they just take a stroll downtown and walk by his club and walk in and they make eye contact. And it just shows you everything that could have been but isn't. And it's just. It's honestly such kind of like a pessimistic movie in one hand, but it's beautiful. And I honestly don't. I think that if it had had the ending that you expect going into it, it would not have packed as much of a punch.
Yeah.
I also think it's shot beautifully. I think.
Yeah, that's the thing that really stands out to me about La La Land is the production
absolutely.
Is so immaculate. The design of, I just think about those dresses that Emma Stone mm-hmm. and her friends wear in the beginning.
I'm thinking about that too.
The way they pop and. And
the yellow, the blues,
how they use
the
them
greens.
For the dancing and stuff. Yeah. That sequence at the party with the camera spinning.
Yeah.
There's just, you mentioned that thing about like, oh, you just don't like musicals. I think for me, La La Land is like maybe the best filmed musical.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think it
you
is.
You know, I don't know if it's necessarily like the best story musical or whatever, but in terms of the production design is top notch.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It's another one that it just hits me. Yeah, I remember that was. I actually only ended up watching it after everything happened at the Academy Awards, and I wanted to figure out personally which one deserved to win. And I'm the weirdo that actually thinks La La Land's better than Moonlight.
It's your personal favorite 17-second best picture winner of all time.
Yes, it is.
For those 17 seconds that it had it. No, I agree with you. I love La La Land as well. I think the music holds up very well. I think it's
absolutely.
It's a fantastic soundtrack. If anything, yes. I'd say
Night Once Upon a Time drove around Chicago listening to the La La Land soundtrack.
Honestly, I still do that sometimes. I just think there's someone in the crowd. Like that's another thing that can make or break a musical. Like I don't remember anything about Cats except for the Mephistopheles song that just annoyed the shit out of me. Whereas I can pick a La La Land song and I haven't watched that movie in months mm-hmm. and could just go with it. So I think that's a testament to how well it's written too, like musically. Mm-hmm.
And it also has the specific performance with Emma Stone, where she says, "What if I can't make it?"
Yeah,
is one of my personal favorite lines of the decade. Yeah. Just the way she delivers that specific line. I know some people. She won it for this. She won it for this one, not for Birdman. But she was nominated for Birdman.
Yeah,
I think this is the superior performance
Agreed.
In every way, shape, or form for her.
Mm-hmm.
Art, I think we're at your number four.
My number four, documentaries of the decade. Imposter, if you've never seen it, definitely check it out. I won't say anything more, right?
You know, you can't say anything more.
The Ooze Alone. Free Solo. If you had the opportunity to see this in an IMAX theater, I just barely got the chance last year. This was the one movie that I've said, the only movie after rewatching and seeing a bunch of extra ones from 2018, the only movie, this documentary, Free Solo, I would have added it to my best. Of that year, and it gets the mention right here at the best of the decade. But the winner, the best documentary in my opinion, number four, O.J. Made in America.
Ooh.
Oscar winner. They had changed the rules after this one won. I can't wait to see what this man does next. But O.J. Made in America is a damn masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Deserves the spot on here, definitely, without a doubt. I highly recommend it. It is cut up into parts. It is this one. It'll stand the test of time for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what is it, 6 hours? but it justifies that, and it's hard to turn away from it because it gives you such a comprehensive look, not just at OJ's life and the situation that, you know, he's widely known for, but all the circumstances around it, why it mattered, so much, why it became such a pivotal moment in terms of race dialogue in America
in the 90s and everything.
In terms
yeah.
of the criminal justice system, it's a yeah, what an amazing documentary.
It's fantastic. And a bunch of accompanying pieces to go with it. FX's miniseries, OJ, The People versus OJ Simpson. Mm-hmm. You have a bunch of other documentaries to go with it. You have a bunch of newsreels to go with it. You got a bunch of books to go with it. There's so much to go with it. But this is, in my opinion, if you had to pick one, definitely watch this incredible piece of filmmaking.
Also, to pair with that, there's a really awesome 30 for 30 documentary from the ESPN series called June 17th, 1994, which is basically like it's trying to give you the feeling of switching the channel on June 17th, 1994. It was the day that the New York Rangers had their victory parade for the Stanley Cup playoffs. There was like a big golf game on, there was a big basketball game on, and it was the day of the legendary O.J. Simpson Bronco chase. So seeing all that, it's a really compelling documentary.
I'd never seen it. Go to
June 17th, 1994 after you watch O.J. Made in America.
Nice.
Wow. All right.
All right. So my number four, I just rewatched this last night to make sure that I wanted it to be this high up, but you know, I mentioned I already got Aaron Sorkin's Social Network at number one. This is another Aaron Sorkin script I'm putting in my top five. At number four, I got Moneyball from Bennett
Miller. Moneyball.
Moneyball.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it feels like a weird movie to put on this list, or at least this high up this on this list, because it's a sports movie without a lot of sports in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's a movie where some of the most exciting stuff is scrolling down spreadsheets, but there's a way in which Aaron Sorkin is able to communicate how these people function at their job and how the system has been functioning incorrectly that, to me, makes this a great example of movies where a man comes up against a system that's not designed for his cleverness. And he has to find ways to outsmart something that's entrenched. And I think we see this in a lot of different contexts, but I don't know if we've ever really seen it in the context of managing a sports team. And you get, so it adds this kind of relatability to the type of conquest he has. I, of course, have some familiarity with like the ideas that he's talking about, which I, you know, just because I've watched some baseball makes it a little more exciting to me. But I think what really works here is the great odd couple dynamic between Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill, maybe giving some of their career best performances. You know, Brad Pitt as Billy Bean just has this effortless, unaffected charm to him. He's kind of at the end of his rope and is done dealing with old men who aren't willing to change. And I'm just so compelled by him. But also there's the anxious energy that Jonah Hill carries, but keeps kind of subdued throughout the movie. They're so much fun to watch against one another. There's that trade deadline scene where he's just waiting for phone calls to come in and it keeps you on the edge of your seat. I really love this movie. It's beautiful. It's beautifully shot too.
It is a good movie, honestly. Like I wouldn't have even necessarily thought to put it on mine, but it's another one of those ones that if I put it on, I'm always like very engaged with what I'm seeing, and yeah, it's good. Great performance.
I return to it a lot, and it's just it's crawled its way up my list.
Jonah Hill get a best supporting actor of the decade? With the amount of supporting acting roles that he's taken.
He should.
What was it?
He's got two of my favorite supporting actor roles.
Wolf of Wall Street. He even cut his salary. He's like anything to be in this movie.
Yeah.
And there he is again.
All right. We are at the last three. Amanda, your 2017 pick.
Okay. So my 2017 pick, this was one where I kind of had a hard time. Obviously, you got Blade Runner 2049, which was just gorgeous, fantastic, amazing follow-up to a movie that most people probably didn't think needed any follow-up, and they did really good with it. But I think the two I'm kind of going back and forth on are Baby Driver and Call Me By Your Name, two very different movies, but two very good ones. Again, big fan of Edgar Wright, his filmmaking and the way he directs. Baby Driver specifically does the less visual, more so to the music. Everything is going to, there is visual accompaniment with a lot of the music that's going on in the background, but if you watch that movie, like the gunshots, his hand hitting the car is all syncing up to the beat that's going on in the movie, which is really impressive to see, and it's kind of nice to catch, and it just makes the whole thing flow in a really nice way, and you'll catch little things throughout, which was it was just a fun movie. I kind of like movies that get that hyper violent towards the end. I'm good with that kind of stuff. And then Call Me By Your Name, other than I always have a huge issue with movies that do this, and it's why I have a hard time always just saying yes, this is great. The age gap between the characters is weird. It's not okay, and it's not something that should be romanticized, even though you're rooting for them as characters together. It makes it weird for me. And it's something that's super, super common in gay media. Any kind of LGBTQ media, you're gonna frequently see those bigger age gaps, not seen as predatory, but seen as romantic. And I think that's a problem, and we need to move past it. But Call Me By Your Name is a beautifully made film. Honestly, the final scene of him crying in front of the fireplace to Visions of Gideon by Sufjan Stevens.
Oh, the music is incredible.
Amazing. The music throughout the whole thing is incredible. That specific scene is so gut-wrenching, and it's literally just holding for the entire song of him crying in front of a fireplace. And it just hits you. But even throughout the entire movie, it's just... It's beautiful, like the surrounding areas are beautiful. The dynamic between the two characters is compelling and interesting while they're trying to obviously navigate just their own separate lives with their own separate girlfriends, but then constantly this stuff going on in the background. Like I said, oh, and then there's just one weird scene that obviously, to me, takes away from the movie. I think it takes away from it. The peach scene takes away from me a little bit, but if it wasn't for the age gap, I would have a much easier time talking this up more. But
thank you for mentioning it. Call Me By Your Name, that was one that I didn't put in my list, but definitely is in my, I must have skipped it.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite movies coming out of Sundance, so our first year of Sundance as well, is one of the ones that we had ended on, so to, you know, ended on the music. Futile Device is another one. I really like the movie. I agree with you too. I agree with you, everything you said about that.
Absolutely. Okay, Art, you're number three.
Let's keep it on the romantics. Phantom Thread.
My boy PTA.
Yeah. The one PTA that makes it, and I do prefer PTA in the 2000s over in the 2010s. Mm-hmm. That's just me.
I would agree with you.
Right? Come on, yeah. I think he would agree.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, yeah.
That's that Phantom Thread.
It's
Phantom Thread is one of my favorites of out of his. It's one of my favorites, clearly, of the decade. It was always going to be top five. I love this movie. It's incredible. I'm not gonna say anything more. You should watch it.
Do you think it's better as a drama or a comedy? Like, I don't know if that's even a fair question, because like rewatching that movie, I laughed so much more than I remember.
Relationships are comedy and drama all into one, Zach. Come on, you know this.
It's true.
It works great as both. I think the dramatic moments are so just over the top that they become funny. And some stuff you laugh at until you realize, oh, that's actually not a joke. That's not something to play around with here. This is actually going to be a serious problem. I absolutely love the movie. It's one of the very few movies that actually made me recline all the way back.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. In the theater, they didn't have recliners. So I really like this movie. Phantom Thread, if you have not seen it, definitely catch it.
It's a great movie. Guys, I'm ready to talk about The Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
Let's do it.
Martin Scorsese directs this raucous, raunchy, ridiculous 3-hour epic that looks into the life of Jordan Belfort, a skeezy, predatory Wall Street trader.
Mm-hmm.
And I think delivers a movie that is simultaneously wildly entertaining and a criticism for finding it wildly entertaining.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
I guess there's some people who don't vibe with that idea, but for me, I think it's brilliant. I think the way that he turns the camera onto the audience towards the end of this movie is such an indictment of the ways in which we reward these bad people who make a habit off of feeding off of us and you know, doing things out of self-interest rather than goodness. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people look at the opulence and the lavishness of their lifestyle as something to aspire to. But if you're really watching the movie, you see the ways in which they're wasteful and they're entitled and they kind of are making fools of themselves. You know, there's that amazing Quaalude scene where Leonardo DiCaprio is doing some of the best acting he's done of his entire career. And yes, it's hysterical, but it's also this adult man who is dragging himself across the floor because he decided to take some drugs for no good reason.
Yeah.
You know, I think the movie, it leaves it for the viewer to take what they want to out of the film and gives it to you in a package that has all the information you need, but also delivers it in a, you know, quick paced, highly quotable, well acted, beautifully shot package.
That's
best
great.
Of decade. This
Steve
best of decade.
Madden. Yeah.
That is.
It's even better than The Irishman. And I love The Irishman.
Oh, it's definitely better than The Irishman.
I think it's
like they're both.
I mean, I
good.
Think it's his best film since Goodfellas, to be honest.
Oh, definitely.
I would agree.
Sure. Yeah. I like a lot of Scorsese films.
You're a big
like,
Shutter Island stan.
Yes, it's Shutter. No. It's Hugo. It's Hugo that does it for me. No, I think he has a lot of films. I think he has obviously Goodfellas, but I think in the turn of the century or the millennium, he had a bunch of really great ones. I personally love The Aviator. I think he had a bunch of again with Irishman to close out the decade. It was 2013 for Wolf of Wall Street, so I didn't necessarily begin it, but I still think that he is one of. We mentioned Denny, but Denny started this decade practically. Like, that's where he gained his steam.
It's true.
Man, Marty goes back to before there were superhero movies, you know?
Yeah.
Like the endurance this man has, the tenure, the amount of films that he has underneath him is crazy when you compare him to other of his peers, like. Where's Francis at, huh? Where's Francie? Where's he at, huh? Where's a bunch of the other filmmakers who were alongside him growing up? They're not there. Not even Spielberg. We were having this discussion with Chase. Ooh. Not even Spielberg. Are you picking Ready Player One? War Horse? Like, come on. What are we doing here?
Absolutely.
I find that Spielberg's doing the equivalent of what Adam Sandler's doing, but just better. It's just like, I'm making movies with friends now.
Spielberg said Netflix shouldn't be considered whatever it was, and then he's, because it's TV, and then he went and he made Quibi.
Yeah.
And he said, you can only watch the show after dark. What?
Yeah. It's just, he's sad.
Marty, best of the decade.
Martin Scorsese, more than just an okay boomer. Amanda, your number two or 2018 pick.
So this was the one, it's very, we got two ends here. I don't know what to pick between Shoplifters, Infinity War, and Into the Spider-Verse. So
all
I'm clearly
movies.
A Marvel shill. But I feel like when, as amazed as so many people were that Avengers stuck the landing back in 2012, Infinity War just amped that up. And I just remember being done in the theater after that finished, and I was just sitting there like so emotionally drained. Like I just got done crying because my boy here
wasn't feeling good.
He wasn't feeling so good anymore. And I don't know, I just thought, obviously there are, if this was just a straight up top 10 of the decade, this might not make it, but it's just something that I feel is good to acknowledge for the deck for that year. It was great. And then again, Spider-Verse was just one of the things I always like to say, animation is an area that is oftentimes so lazily put together. So many movies are just made as cheap as possible, as quick as possible, with the laziest style of animation and basically just taking what people have done great things with 3D modeling like Pixar and then just making the lazy version of it. And then you've got Into the Spider-Verse comes in here where they're editing different characters to different frame rates, and you've got so like these vivid backgrounds, and each character gets their own feel, and it all meshes together in this one world. It's got great style, it's got a great story, great voice acting. Overall, it's amazing. And then Shoplifters is just gut wrenching as a probably, I think, my only so far mentioned foreign film. Mm-hmm. It's Japanese, and it looks at the idea of like, is your family who you're, you know, is family blood or is family who you choose? And it doesn't necessarily have a satisfying ending, but it's just a very real movie, and it's just, gorgeous. But yeah, those are my 2018s.
Fantastic pick.
Great picks.
I like to add, like father, like son. Ted to the Shoplifter from
another
movie he had directed. I even enjoyed that one just a little bit more than Shoplifters. I would highly recommend that one for Best of the Decade.
Yeah, that was very good.
All great picks. Do you fall on the side of Infinity War being better than Endgame?
Absolutely.
Nice. Interesting. That's been like a pretty solid debate. Okay. I don't know. I waver between the two because I feel like Endgame, knowing the results of Endgame. Yeah, because it sticks the landing and there's just so much. I think it really is an independent film for like, not to call it an independent film, but it's a very much mumblecore drama at the beginning of the, just being the, it's the leftovers.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the first half of it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that for sure. I just felt like the stakes felt higher in Infinity War, and I feel like
the balls to end Infinity War the way they did is really cool.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah.
It's cool to have that debate between people, like that it's a valid debate to have between the two.
I think so.
You know? And it's a much better debate to have than Star Wars.
Was any of this planned?
I know, right? Yeah. My number two has to go to all of the foreign films that are out there leading up to what was going to be a little bit of a cheat, but I won't do that here. I am going to end it. Look, I'm going to do it for the podcast. I will name my number two and my number one, but they're tied when I make the Let Me Explain.
Of course.
My favorite foreigns, man, there's so much, guys.
There's a lot.
Portrait of a Lady on Fire is an incredible movie. An incredible film from 2019 that I highly implore you guys catch in 2020. The Secret in Their Eyes is a movie that you should not watch the remake of. Watch the original Argentinian film. Yep. Do not watch the remake. Watch the original Argentinian film. It is fantastic. Do not watch the remake to Force Majeure. Watch it, sure. Watch the original Force Majeure as well, though. That's the one that's coming out called Downhill for the remake.
Great pick.
Force Majeure is incredible. Secret in Their Eyes, Portrait, The Hunt. I don't know if this is getting remade, but do not watch the remake to The Hunt. No. Watch The Hunt.
I like The Hunt.
Wild Tales, another Argentinian film, an anthology series type thing. It's fantastic. I was originally going to put Phoenix on this as my...
Ooh.
As my number two, and then I was going to cop out and tie the top two, but I've decided to not cheat you guys out. But I do want to give Phoenix, it's 10 seconds here, so it has four more seconds before I tell you what's number two. But Phoenix is a very good movie.
What an ending.
It's on the Criterion channel. I hate to La La Land it, but Phoenix, very good movie. Go check it out. I adore that movie. Number two is 2019's Parasite. I love Parasite. I do believe it's best of the decade, like best of the decade material. But another movie just has a little bit more time with it. And I just got to be honest with you. And it's going to tie on my Let Me Explain list. But right here, as of now, I got to be honest with you guys. Parasite. I believe it's going to be your number one right here. So if you want to start off the... It's your number one, right?
Mine?
2019?
I was going to let you have it because I was going to cheat and do a different number one because I knew Parasite was going to be on yours.
Oh, you were. Ooh. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so don't give me the cop out. Let me cheat.
Look, I absolutely adore this movie. I think it's going to stand the test of time. I talked about how that poster, it's a cliche already. It's already a cliche. This thing is like all of the iconic posters we grew up knowing. This is going to be a part of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
What a speech by Mr. Bong Joon-ho at the Golden Globes.
If you can get over the one inch barrier
that is subtitles.
Subtitles. You can open your world.
I thought they were going to get the best screenplays and they were going to include his speech as one of the nominees as well. Yeah. It's just an incredible feat of filmmaking, his entire filmography. If we want to include some other ones that he had this year, he also had Mother, which I have coming in the mail.
Yeah, Mother.
That's actually one I haven't been able to catch.
Memories of Murder. Memories of Murder, I believe.
He's got a Host is another one.
Host?
The Train one. I don't know. Snowpiercer. Okja, which is another one of Zach's favorites. Just a jam-packed year. A person who's really taken advantage of Netflix and streaming and just international features and like what they've been able to do. I hope that it gets people to watch a lot more other foreign films, a lot more Korean films because they got some crazy stuff in the works. But as we always like to push, there is so many great stories over there. And a lot of things do get lost in translation, which is why it's always worth getting through that one-inch barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Parasite is definitely worth it.
Yeah, agreed.
I love it. Maybe next year.
Absolutely.
I will say it's fully tied. But nonetheless, I made the list. Parasite.
Parasite.
Best of the decade.
That's great.
Yeah, I ultimately decided to not put any 2019 films on my best of the decade list, not because 2019 wasn't a great year and Parasite was, you know, led that year with it just being an incredible movie, but I want to sit with some of these movies more.
That's fair.
And Parasite's one of those movies that, like, I my love for it is so active, my memories of it are so fresh, that it's hard to really qualify it against some of these movies that I've been sitting with for a decade. Yeah. But it's definitely belongs on this list, as do most Bong Joon-ho films. He's maybe my choice for, like, director of the decade.
If you look at
some of his work, like Snowpiercer.
Yep.
Great choice there. I'm surprised it only made it to number two. Makes me excited to see what you got at number one. I mentioned my number two is Mad Max Fury Road.
Right.
Amanda,
my number one.
It's to you.
My number one, 2019.
Your number one, which is your top movie of 2019.
It's now my cheated because I feel like I've been going back and forth. Yeah. I do think this might be my most loved movie of 2019. So it's actually like third on my list, but I think it's my most loved. And it's Honey Boy. And I love Honey Boy. I saw Honey Boy at Sundance, and then I saw it again at TIFF.
Those Sundance movies, they get you.
They get you. And it, like I said, we talked about this on the 2019. So if you want the more elaborate explanation, you can go over there. But just knowing that it's at its core, it is essentially just the story of a child actor dealing with the abuse of his father, but primarily taking place in a reflection. It doesn't feel like a reflection, but the whole thing is him writing down the accounts of the things that happened to him when he was younger, because he's in court-appointed rehab for getting a DUI. And then we just kind of get these. It is largely taking place when he's a kid, and it doesn't feel like it's a flashback type situation. But it's just him living with his dad in a motel. It's largely based on Shia LaBeouf's own story. He is the one who wrote it, and he ends up playing his own father in the movie, which shouldn't work. Should have literally sent him back so many steps on his own recovery, but it worked, and he honestly seems like he's so much more at peace. I made an entire video about Shia where I was going through different interviews and honestly just comparing interviews from like January of 2019 to June of 2019 is a night and day difference. And I love the movie. I love Amma Harel, the director. They're so active with the community online, and I think it's the love that they have for that movie really shows, and I love it. So that's my number one.
All right, Honey Boy. Amanda's last installment in her best of the decades. Let's put it that way, since we are going in a chronological order. I also mentioned my number one earlier. It was The Social Network. Yes. So we've got one movie left to reveal. Are you ready?
Whiplash, bro.
Exactly. I knew it.
Amazing Spider-Man 2 is a chronological feat. Whiplash. Amanda, let's go. Zach, let's go.
I had this at number five.
That was that was my best of 2014, but I just put Nightcrawler in its place because I knew he was going to talk about it.
I can't call it a debut because it's not.
It feels like a
debut. Kinda. Hey, you know, people don't include Kendrick's Section 80 as a debut. They say Good Kid, Mad City is, so I guess he's getting the same treatment over here. But nonetheless, what a movie. What a film. What a picture, as they would say. I absolutely love this movie. It's replaced the jazz for anything else, honestly.
Yeah.
You're into dance, you're into cooking, you're into, I don't know, collecting Funko Pops, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's about the pursuit of a craft a profession.
A passion,
you know,
to the point of, like, not necessarily dangerous obsession, but, like, obsession to the point that your own well-being will start going out the window because you become so... Right. Just obsessed with perfection.
It's a beautiful blend between the two, where you don't know at what point. At what point do you stop? And the question gets put back to you. It's like, well, the greats would never stop. But is that being said by someone who's abusive? Is it not? It blends it where there's no easy answers, which a lot of people tend to negate the movie for because it doesn't have that. Why would you want that? I would not love the movie if that was the case. Some people feel that there are aspects of it that should be taken out. Some people don't like the dad. I was like, well, that just goes to parental. Side of this pursuit. Some people don't like the girlfriend part, and I was like, well, what? Okay.
That you need to show that he's so obsessed with what's happening that he's going to push everything out, everything else aside.
It's a
tale. And be kind of a dick about it, you know? Like, Be exactly. like, you're gonna pull, you're gonna stop me from being great.
Nothing's gonna stop. And was he wrong? Is he right? Could she have been someone who could have benefited him?
Yeah.
Those are all parts that are there in the story.
Absolutely.
And honestly, it has one of the best endings. It's invigorating.
Mm-hmm.
I could watch it on silent. I could watch it just the volume. Just
yeah.
The
yeah, forgive the pun, but that is a pitch perfect ending. Yeah. Literally. The way that it keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Yes.
You know, just kind of. You've been through this unreal journey with these characters, and you can see just in their expressions, in their looks at one another, just how much they are in that moment, yeah. And what a critical moment it is for them. You know, Damien Chazelle has talked about how he envisions that the Andrew character after this movie.
Becomes a bum,
dying of a heroin overdose or something, to be more like the guys he idolized.
And yep.
I feel like you can see that in his face in those last few minutes of the movie.
For sure. Yeah. He does what he does best. He ends all of his movies on that shot of his actors' faces, just like he does in La La, just like he does in First Man, just like he does in probably everything else that he's going to do. But I absolutely adored the emotions that it gives you. I know exactly what theater I was sitting in. I know exactly what seat I was sitting in. I remember the movie ending, getting up and acknowledging the other two gentlemen who were there with us, who had sat through that, because that ending, I don't mean to sound pretentious in any way, shape, or form, or corny, really. Yo, you know when you see a movie, you're just like it gets you?
Yeah.
That's Whiplash to me. Like, Whiplash to me is on a whole nother level. I know it is to a lot of the other people as well. Or another movie gets you to feel that way. It's the power of movies. I don't know how else to put it. It's just the way that it's edited, the way that the sound is cut, all of it is fused together to be something that, one, I don't think Chazelle will ever be able to replicate again. I just think it's impossible. And it is one of the best of the decades is the thing I compared to it. And the only thing that came close was Parasite. That's the only thing that came close to it. But I absolutely adore this movie. It's something that's motivational and at the same time...
Cautionary tale.
Thank you. Thank you. It really is. And I feel like some people don't know how to do both. But like every substance, everything that's a part of your life, anything can be abused or used to the fullest potential that it can. It's just all up to you.
Absolutely. That's crazy.
I would say good job. But great job. Masterpiece. Yeah. A must watch. That is my favorite of the decade.
Yeah. No.
A lot of really great choices. It's hard to just narrow it down to 10.
Very.
We didn't really do that, but we tried.
You did. We failed. But it's okay. We're proud of you, Zach.
Thank you. I don't know if y'all got your lists on Letterboxd. I got mine, so I'll link it in the comments description down below, so you can check out more of my opinions and what movies didn't make the cut. But I think that's just about all for our countdown of the best films of the 2010s. Mm-hmm. Let us know what you thought in the comments down below. Maybe leave us your best of the decade list too. Amanda, where can people find more from you?
You can find me everywhere, from YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, all of the above. Amanda the Jedi, all together, all one word.
Arturo, where can people find more from you?
You can find me at the A to Z Show or Let Me Explain on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and YouTube. You can find me every week here on the Intricate Podcast.
Yes, you can find more from me, Zach Shevich, by following me on Twitter, Instagram, or Letterboxd at Zshevich. That's Zshevich. And check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/multiplexshow. But also, listen to every episode of the Intercut Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, your favorite podcatcher. I like Overcast. And then make sure you're subscribed not just to the audio podcast, but to the video feed as well on youtube.com/intercutpod, where you can catch our bright, smiling faces as we break down the latest in entertainment. Find new episodes of Intercut every Friday, and please leave us a comment, like the videos, consider heading over to iTunes to leave us a 5-star review. We need some more feedback. Please just, you know, let us know that we're doing a good job.
Leave us 1-star, just leave us something.
I mean, maybe don't leave a 1-star, that doesn't help us.
Leave
like our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages. All of them are at Intercut Pod to get updates throughout the week from me, from Art, from Amanda, from all of our guests here on Intercut. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, we'll do this again in 10 years.
That was a good one. I think that may have been your best of the decade.